Keep It Locked for Border 04, an audio tour of Europe's eastern edge. Stories and sounds of the unstoppable movement of people across the borders of Serbia, Romania, and the Ukraine, of campaigns for legalization, workers' rights, and freedom, in the midst of countries ravaged by 15 years of structural adjustment and war. CKLN was there, and we're bringing it to you for the next half hour. Fortress Europe. It's a phrase that became well known even in North America in the past decade or two. The phrase evokes images of border guards, barbed wire, floodlights, as people struggle to cross waters, forests, or checkpoints. Hundreds of thousands of people try to enter Europe every year, whether to apply for political asylum, to work on farms, construction sites, as domestics or computer programmers or prostitutes, to study, to join their families, or just to escape from war or poverty. As Europe becomes more integrated, it becomes a more inviting destination. Status in one European country means access to jobs, education, and social security throughout all of the European Union, increasingly. And on May 1st of this year, that European Union became bigger. 10 countries joined the EU: Poland, Hungary, the Czech Republic and Slovenia, the Baltic states of Latvia, Lithuania and Estonia, and Cyprus and Malta. While the people of the new member states don't all have the same rights as their Western neighbors, they're on the way, and the border of Europe effectively is moving one country to the east. So what does this change mean for the new member states and their neighbors to the south or the east? What does it mean for the peoples of North Africa, the Middle East, or Asia who transit through Eastern Europe to the West? This summer, researchers and activists traveled to Serbia, Romania, the Ukraine, and Poland to learn more about the conditions on the new European border. What strategies are people using to undermine the borders, to cross them, to make new lives with or without papers? For the next 6 weeks during Monday's Word of Mouth, I'm going to be playing sounds and interviews that I collected over the course of this tour. Now, many of the most interesting stories couldn't be recorded. A Palestinian man selling shoes in the Arab market of Timișoara, Romania, or the Chinese merchants speaking through their Romanian interpreters, Palestinians singing folk songs in a Ukrainian forest, a man from the former Russian state of Georgia calling out from his prison cell in the middle of farmers' fields, feminist activists in Belgrade speaking truth about sex trafficking, organized crime, and the state, border guards between Hungary and Serbia friendly, lobbying for a raise, border guards between Slovakia and the Ukraine searching cars for weapons. I have some audio snapshots to share of life on and across the new European borders. I hope you get something out of it, although I, of course, can't claim to offer a real overview of the whole situation. But I'll start with some context from Hagen Kopp, working on a day-to-day level with migrants and refugees for many years in Germany. Hagen is involved with No One Is Illegal. It's a local group in the German city of Hanau. He also collaborates politically across Europe in the No Border Network. Hagen describes the competition between the determination of people to move and migrate across borders with the efforts of the states to control them. So I asked him first to talk about the practical meaning of the term Fortress Europe.
Okay, the term Fortress Europe itself includes a certain meaning to exclude people from outside Europe to enter this fortress. Of course, it's right that thousands of people died when they tried to enter this fortress, crossing the Mediterranean Sea or some border rivers, and you have these really cruel border measures keeping people outside and deporting them. So it's right to use this term on one hand. On the other hand, we more and more criticize this term, because we think it's too static and will not catch the whole reality. Because it, all the time gives the feeling that the European states are so strong and so powerful that they really can exclude people what they cannot do really. In the last years, we started also a campaign against this International Organization of Migration. It's really one of the most important agencies of migration control, and they use this term migration management. So we said now perhaps much more better to speak about freedom of movement against global migration management. And management means much more a combination of exclusion of the unwanted refugees and migrants on one hand, but also the selective recruitment of cheap workers to feed these segments of the labor markets in European countries, which are dependent to such kind of cheap work.
Again, I'm sure it's different from one European country, Western European country, to another. But can you give some idea of the different kinds of legal status and the legal ways that people can immigrate to Western European countries?
But this is a very complex picture.
Yeah.
On one hand, you have the whole thing of asylum or of getting a residence permission by humanitarian reasons or grounds. And this part is really declining more and more because the restrictions and the conditions people have to fulfill are higher and higher, and the rates of accepted people concerning asylum are going down more and more in all European countries. A second possibility to get into European countries is by contract work, but it's also, as I know, very limited number of people who can come by such kind of contracts, and it depends very much to the needs of the labor markets. So you have it for the seasonal workers, mm-hmm. to help in the harvest seasons in the agricultural sector, for example, or these contract workers concerning construction sites. Mm-hmm. So these are the main, at least in Germany, the main sectors where you will find around 300,000 people yearly, but limited to a certain time or to a certain construction site. And if people stay longer, they are overstayers and get illegal. Or
now, of course, many more people are coming than just those who have a work contract or are able to claim asylum on political or religious grounds. So what are some of the issues that are facing people in those communities? What kind of conditions?
If they're illegal, you mean?
Mm. Yes.
As I said, on one hand, it's an open secret that a certain number of illegal migrants are necessary to feed the labor market. On the other hand, and this differs from government to government or from country to country, there is a big interest to get all these processes under control. And you will find it's much more in the North European countries than in the South. In the North European, including Germany, you have really a lot of controls in the streets, in the train stations, all over the country, and also a strong registration law and a lot of traps where people can find themselves if they try to organize their survival, daily survival, without any status. In the southern countries, like Italy, like Spain, like Portugal, such kind of controls are much less. And even if police control such people, it's not sure that they will be imprisoned and detained and deported later on. But in Germany, you can be sure if somebody is controlled and without any passport and without any papers, he will be detained firstly, and to make sure that he can be deported if they are without papers. And people, of course, face a lot of problems to find a good work, to find a flat, to get medical help or if it's necessary. So they are quite under pressure all the time, and can it manage only in their own community structures with help of other people. And the numbers are quite surprising, perhaps, if you think about 1 million. This is an estimation, about 1 million illegal people without documents, also in Germany. It's quite a big number, and you can imagine that some other million people are involved in supporting them in their daily life. And so it seems that also the control is very hard. A lot of people can manage to live and work and find their way.
You've been working with people who have arrived in Germany one way or another for a long time. What are some of the ways that people come, and what are some of the obstacles that they face as they're
entering? Yeah, I think we should really see it somehow like a competition between the migration and border regime on one hand and the migration movement, the autonomy of migration on the other hand. The development of the border regime in the last 10, 15 years is really increasing and without any limit, without borders, you can say, concerning technical tools and really rearmament of the border, restrictions in visa politics, all such things. And on the other hand, you have thousands and thousands of migrants who nevertheless try to enter this fortress and can manage to do it inside their communities with help of course, a lot of time with help of commercial smugglers who are necessary to use because a lot of things cannot be managed by people themselves. They need the help of professional travel agencies, you can say. So you have also times these mutual consequences of finding a way for undermining these borders from the migration side. On the other hand, the attempt from the governments and now harmonized by EU and Schengen to make it more and more difficult for the people.
According to the Schengen Accords, which were first signed in the mid-90s, all European Union countries share information through the Schengen Information System. It's a massive database about everyone who's been deported or ordered deported from any EU country, and all police and, of course, all border guards throughout the European Union have access to this database. And this Schengen Information System is being further enhanced now by a shared database of fingerprints of anyone who's filed an asylum claim anywhere in the European Union. The new member states are not participating in this yet, but it's the intention of the European Union that no one is able to claim refugee status in more than one EU country.
Germany, as a really in a driving force in the whole process of Schengen and European harmonizing asylum and migration politics, also realized that they cannot keep their borders against these migration processes if they keep it on a national level. They really have to Europeanize or even globalize migration control to try to destroy the flight routes, to try to block migration and try to detain people already in countries of transit and to make it really more and more difficult on the whole route of migration, instead of hoping to keep them outside directly at the border with their, of course, thousands of border guards on the borders, for example, to Poland. So they really realize they will lose this competition or this struggle, this combating illegal migration, if they keep their efforts on a national level. So it's whole EU enlargement process. Of course, there is one very central condition which all the members, the new member states, has to fulfill. This is adopting all the migration laws and asylum laws from the Western European countries, this so-called Schengen Acquis, and to export it to the East and try to block migration movement in the countries of transit. And nevertheless, migrants could manage to find other ways, and we are quite sure that they will find their ways also to use other and new spaces which are given now with this enlargement process, which is a very ambivalent process so far.
That was Hagen Kopp of No One Is Illegal in Hanau, Germany, one of the countries now sharing a border with the European Union, which didn't before, is Serbia. Hungary, which joined the EU on May 1st of this year, lies to the north of Serbia, and Croatia, which hopes to join the EU in 2007, lies to the west. Manuela Bojagiev works with Germany's migrant rights group Kanakatak. She spent the summer in Belgrade, Serbia, researching the life of migrants in Belgrade, which is Serbia's capital. She looked at the history of movement from and through Serbia and the impact of the EU's migration policies on the country. In collaboration with Daunt Rhine of Ultra Red, which is a music production company based in Los Angeles, she presented some of her research at an event at the Student Cultural Center in Belgrade in July.
But who are the migrants in Serbia? Migration in former Yugoslavia was mainly shaped by emigration. While people from this region would migrate and settle elsewhere, recruitment contracts tried to get these movements under control. Having initiated the formation of the non-aligned countries, Yugoslavia was also a spot to which people from East Bloc countries would flee to demand this asylum. It was a movement that was not public knowledge, as the wish to leave a real communist country was not supposed to exist. In the 90s, during the time of the war, refugees escaped to all parts of the country. Others made their way to Germany, Sweden, Austria, where a temporary residence permission was granted for war refugees. In this region, more than 1 million people still live as refugees, while former Yugoslavian countries are among those topping the list whose citizens demand asylum in the EU. Former Yugoslavia became the gateway to Europe. People from countries like Afghanistan, Iraq, Armenia, or China would use the Balkan route to transit into Schengen EU. On 1st of May, the so-called eastward enlargement expanded Europe further to the east. Yesterday's borders became today's transit areas and tomorrow's scenes of immigration. Borders shifted and new spaces were created, border spaces. The new borders already cast their shadows far beyond that geographical line which is usually considered a border. This is so because the border has long since outgrown its topographical specificity. It has become flexible, no longer separating inside from outside with a supposed spatial precision, but rather mediated by an ever-growing space in between, interspersed with sequences of control posts. The border persists from within Europe, along the motorways, the traffic networks marked by admission and detention camps. Europe's borders, too, fray into a hazy space in between, the border's buffer zone. The EU calls upon its non-European neighbors to implement a harmonized border politics. Prospective accession countries like Croatia and Turkey concede to the demand, demonstrating that the EU's influence extends far beyond its actual territory. The Mediterranean Sea turns into a liquid border, increasingly incorporating the North African neighbor states as cooperating border guards. Last year, British Prime Minister Tony Blair suggested that admission camps be established for migrants in trouble spots outside Europe. This testifies to the increasingly far-reaching control fantasies of transnational politics. Blair's suggestion has just been picked up again as a topic by Germany's Minister of Interior, Otto Schily. In Serbia, all those people who are being caught without papers are being detained in Padinska Skela. Officially, there are only men being imprisoned for a maximum of 30 days in a separate part of the jail. This is when organizations like the UNHCR or the International Organization for Migration come into play. It is they that decide over asylum cases or organized so-called voluntary repatriation, while the Red Cross distributes telephone cards. Like other EU neighbors before it, Serbia is faced with a demand to harmonize its migration policies and tighten its border controls. As a result, a new asylum law is presently being drafted in Serbia. According to international timetables, the law was supposed to be implemented this past April, a year from Serbia's entry into the European Council. The policy is still being debated. But sometimes international timetables meet with their schedule merciless. In September 2002, 230,000 people in Germany lived with so-called Duldung, a temporary residence permission. Half of them coming from Serbia, Crna Gora, or from Kosovo. 60,000 of them being Roma, most of them being war refugees. In 1996, Germany and Yugoslavia signed a repatriation agreement. The plan was to return 10,000 refugees per year. Although this agreement was suspended in 1998 due to the EU embargo, it was immediately renewed in 2001 when the new government in Yugoslavia came into power. Otto Schily argued that this, finally, would help to fight illegal migration from the Balkan region, and that the Serbian government made a big step in the direction of Europe. Taking this process into account, should we really talk about Fortress Europe? If the migrants experience their residency states as precarious, just as precarious are the mechanisms of regulation. In fact, the implementation of migration regime would have to be described as a reaction rather than an action against migratory movement. Migration resists the efforts of being regulated. Migration regulation is never able to wholly fulfill its own standards of control. The often life-threatening effects of border regulation on the dangerous route over rough terrain and across guarded borders turn into something new, the chance for a better life. If the EU accession process requires implementation of a migration regime, and moreover, if those requirements serve as the fundamental condition of accession, what happens in a country like Serbia, where one-third of the population lives below the poverty line? Who are the migrants that are already being affected by such policies and that such policies respond to?
That was Manuela Bojagiev with Don Ryan of UltraRed presenting their research and work in Belgrade in July 2004. In the next few weeks, I'll try to illustrate more of the economic, social, and political forces at play along the new European border that have an impact on migration, and also the strength and determination of those who are seeking a better life. 15 years after the collapse of the Soviet bloc, and only a few years after the breakup of the former Yugoslavia, all these states are in a process of rapid economic transformation. It's marked by high rates of unemployment, growing poverty, decline in services, as well as the looting of the public sector by Western and local corporations, not to mention organized crime. For the next 2 weeks, I'll be focusing especially on experiences of women as factory workers, as migrant farm laborers, domestic workers, and sex trade workers. And after that, I'll be moving to sharing some voices and stories of migrants from the Middle East and Asia who've made their way to Romania and the Ukraine on their journey to the West. And of course, throughout, we're going to be hearing about how people are organizing in support of the rights of migrants wherever they're coming from and wherever they're going. This is Border 04, an audio tour of Europe's eastern edge. If you have any feedback on what you've heard, please give us a call at 416-595-5068. Thanks for listening,